All right, well, let's gather back in. Good morning, everyone. Good to see you here. We're working our way slowly through the book of Judges. We've been at this now all summer. And we started at the very beginning, and we've walked through the book of Judges and looked at different people, how they've responded to their world, and we're walking through that, and we call it character in the midst of chaos, because Judges, we see that culture, society is kind of spinning downward. That if you kind of take the book of Judges as a history book, you see a society starting here and then slowly degrading as time goes on, and things become worse and worse and worse. Now we're near the end of that story, and so what we're seeing is society tracking downward even farther. In fact, next week we're going to kind of hit the low point, and I'll just warn you, it's somewhat shocking. If you've never read the book of Judges before, it's not a lot of fun. A lot of the things that we see are disturbing, perhaps. I'm glad Jason has next week, because it's a hard message. But anyhow, that's what we're seeing is the culture, kind of the societal norms are tracking downward. And so we're looking at, how do people respond in this? What do we do in the midst of that? How do we how do these people respond in that? Are they men and women of character or not? Are they just tracking along with society? Are they creating the society? How do people respond in that kind of an environment? The goal, guys, is this. It's not just to read history. You know what? The Bible is not there just as a history book. It's as a lesson, an object lesson to you and I. And so the question we've been asking ourselves all summer long is, okay, what can I learn about how I'm living in this world right now? Because that's the great thing about God. God is not the God of the past solely. He is. He was there. He watched all of this stuff happen. He was engaged in it. He was speaking. He was the God of the past. But that's not all he is. He's the God of right now. He's the God of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, August 18th. Is it the 18th? 2012. Whatever the day it is, that's the day that God is. And he speaks to you and I now. And he'll speak to you tomorrow. This is the amazing thing about God, is that God is not just in little places or times. He wasn't just back there. He wasn't just with the nation of Israel speaking to them. He's here now. He's speaking to us as Americans. He's not just here on a Sunday morning, and then we're kind of on our own for the rest of the week. Tomorrow morning when you wake up, God will be speaking. He'll be seeing. He'll be interacting, longing to interact with you. This is an amazing thing, that the God who created us, the God who holds the universe together, the God that was there then, this God that transcends time, that is powerful beyond belief, has his eye on you and I. And when I leave here today, when you leave here today, God will go with you. Because he can. He can go with all of us. And he speaks to us. He says he longs for us to know him, and for him to be engaged with us. And so the goal of this whole thing is not just to fill up time, not just to read the history books. It's for you and I to figure out, okay, how can I listen to God here? We see how these people responded. We see how they engaged with God. We see how they responded to the world around them. The goal is, how can we do that as well? Okay, so that's what we're doing. And so we're following the book of Judges. We're very near the end. Last week, Mike talked about a story where, again, we see people interacting. Today, what we're going to do is kind of pick up. This is an extension of the story from last week, a little bit. And in Judges 18:1, we're in Judges chapter 18 today, and in the very first statement there, it says, "In those days Israel had no king." Now this is a theme. This verse, this phrase, shows up again and again and again and again and again in the book of Judges. And what it's talking about is that really something that Mike talked about last week, that the people are, it's more than just statement of their political situation. It's true that they had no king as a governing ruler, and so society was kind of on its own, but it goes deeper than that. They had no king as far as their spiritual life as well, and we see that with the nation of Israel, because what has caused society to spiral down is they have rejected God as their Lord, as their master, as their father, as their king. God had said to them, "You're mine, you're my chosen possession in the world. I want to use you to influence the entire world, and I'm going to watch over you and lead you." nation of Israel, and they rejected that, and they said, nah, we're going to serve this other god, this god that's made out of stone. And so God would discipline them, and they would respond, and they'd come back to God, but not completely. And so they would cycle downward, downward, downward. And they have continually rejected God as their master, and so we're seeing here this degeneration of society. Now today what we're going to look at is a story of the tribe of Dan. There were 12 tribes in Israel, all named after 12 sons of a guy named Jacob, whose name was also Israel. And so Jacob had 12 sons. Each of those sons was the head of one of the tribes. Dan was one of his sons, and so the tribe of the Danites was one of the 12 tribes of Israel. We're going to look at a little story involving those guys, but here's what we're going to do today, okay? Here's what I would like you to think about and to engage in a little bit as we go forward with this. We're going to see pictures of people behaving badly today. When we started Judges, there were good examples for us to emulate. Say, boy, that I want to be like that guy, or I want to be like that woman. We're seeing less and less and less of those as time goes on, and I think we're kind of done in the book of Judges now seeing people that I want to be like that. Now we're seeing people behaving badly. And so, okay, that's fine. We can learn from that. Here's what I would like you to kind of have in your head as we start. I want to read a verse to you. This is in actually Psalm 139. I don't have this on the PowerPoint, but I think about this verse a lot. It was written by David, one of the kings of Israel, much later after this, the time of Judges. And he's saying to God this: search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life. When I think about that, I think, you know what, God? There are things about me that aren't as they should be. God, there are things about me that maybe I see and maybe I don't, but there are ways that I really can and should change. Character qualities that I don't have. Just selfish, foolish things that I do, that I perpetuate, that you really want to help me to change in. And David recognized that about himself. I'm not as I could be. I'm not as I should be, and I'm not as I could be. So God, point out what's wrong with me. Take a look at me, God. Search me, O God. It says, know my heart. Test me. Know my thoughts. See if there's anything in me that isn't what it should be, and then help me to change. Lead me in this everlasting life. That's what I want you to think about today. There are things, this may come as a shock to some of you, you're not as you could be. You're not as you should be. Actually, that probably, if that does come as a shock to you, that's what you need to grow in. You're not perfect. We aren't what we should or could be. There is a great benefit in learning to have that heart with the Lord. You know, we talk about God wanting to lead us, speak to us as we go throughout the days. One of the things God does is he encourages us. He provides for us. And feeling God's encouragement, being built up by him, is such a marvelous thing. Letting God provide for us, being thankful, seeing all the ways that he cares for us, that's a wonderful thing. Just learning to be comfortable with God, having peace in the midst of chaos, that's a wonderful thing. But another thing that God does is he corrects us. He changes us. He challenges us. That's what we're focusing on today. I'm going to look at this passage and say, okay, here are things that are going wrong, things that probably would need to change. And the question I want you to ask yourself is to go to God and say, all right, God, you have freedom today to talk to me about my life. Search me, O God, know my heart. Test me, Lord. If there's anything in me that offends you, help me to change it, okay? So you know where we're going? This is kind of, we're letting God speak to us. Now, the things I'm going to talk about, maybe they'll resonate with you, maybe they won't. But either way, we can start with that question. God, you speak to me, all right? So you know where we're going with this for the next few minutes? We're letting God point out to us our flaws. Letting God point out to us our flaws. Not because he wants to beat us up over them. That's not what David said. If David was afraid of God seeing his flaws, he wouldn't have gone to him and said, hey, here I am, take a look at me, tell me what's wrong. He had great confidence in God. That God would point out to him, this is wrong, David. This is not what I want you to be. But, okay, let's you and I work to make it different. We don't have to be afraid of this. We don't have to be nervous about God pointing out to us what we need to grow in. It's a wonderful thing when we come to God and say, you know what, you're my dad. you want the best for me. You're my friend. You're my lover. He says all these words that God uses to describe his relationship with us so we can go to him confidently like David did. Hey, here I am. I'm coming. Search me. Know me. I'm an open book to you. You have your way with me. That's the goal here today, okay? So, that's where we're going. Now, these things we see today, maybe they'll speak to you. Maybe tomorrow God will bring something else. Maybe God will speak to you something completely outside of what we're talking about here today. But we're going to let God kind of be like David. Search us, oh God, know my heart, all right? So, here we go. I am going to take off here and start off in the book of Judges, chapter 18. I'm going to read a little bit, and we'll talk about it and take a look at these things. All right, in verse 1 it says, in those days Israel had no king. And in those days the tribe of the Danites was seeking a place of their own where they might settle, because they had not yet come into an inheritance among the tribes of Israel. So the Danites sent 5 warriors from Zorah and Eshtaol to spy out the land and explore it. These men represented all their clans. They told them, go explore the land. So, I mean, this is, just to give you a little backdrop, the nation of Israel had come out of Egypt. They'd been slaves there for 400 years. God had brought them there with Moses and all the stories about Moses. And now they are in the promised land, the nation of Israel as we know it today. And they are conquering it. They're taking it over. There were other peoples there, and they're slowly displacing these peoples. And God had laid out to them, he told them a long time ago, this is what I want you to do, this is how I want you to do it. And so the tribe of the Danites, these tribes, God had divided the whole land up among, he'd given them boundaries. This is where I want the tribe of Judah to live. This is where I want the tribe of Benjamin to live. This is where I want the tribe of Ephraim to live. And so the Danites had a place where they were going to stay. They needed a home. Now, this is a reasonable thing. It says, in those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking a place of their own because they had not yet come into an inheritance. Okay, it's a reasonable thing to think, okay, we don't have a place to live yet. We need to find one. But it's interesting. Can you put that map up, Luke? The problem with this is, okay, we don't have a place to stay, so we need to go find one. Well, the mistake they made was this. They didn't need to go find one. God had told them exactly where he wanted it to be. I don't know if you can see this. You see this right here? In the book of Joshua, God had laid out very clearly, okay, tribe of Dan, this is exactly where you're going to live. He'd laid out the boundaries. They had, this is the coast here, this is the Mediterranean Sea. So they had coastland here. These are your boundaries. Ephraim, this is another tribe of Israel. Here's a tribe of Israel. This is where I want you to be. God had been exceptionally clear. They knew exactly what it is that God had wanted them to do. But if you go back and look in Joshua, it says that the Danites, you know what? It was hard to take the coastland here. Makes sense. That's valuable property, and so the people that were there didn't want to give it up, and it was difficult. They'd kind of taken over this part here, but this was hard, and so they said, you know what? Maybe we should find a different place to stay. God had told them where to stay. It was difficult. They said, we're going to find a different place to stay. Can you go back to the verse, Luke? And so it says they went out looking. And then, so the 5 men left, came to Laish. This is a town where they saw the people were living in safety, like the Sidonians, unsuspecting and secure. Okay, understand what's happening here. God had told them where to be. They'd gone there and found out, hey, these people don't want to leave, and it's difficult, and they're fighting us. I don't like that. Let's go someplace where it's easy. So they went and found a town where the people were unsuspecting. They didn't have any allies. This was easy. And in fact, if you read here, it says there was fruit there. It was a great land. And so they looked at this and thought, you know what? God said we should stay here, but this seems so much better. Can you go back to the map? This is where God told them to go. But you see way up there, I don't know if you can read it, the town that says Dan. Can you guys read that? Right there. That's a town that says Dan. That's Laish. That's the town that we just looked at there. Now, it's interesting. That town is outside of the boundary of where God wanted them to be at all. So what's the point of all this? God had said to the Danites, this is where I want you to live. I'm going to provide for you. Here's your homeland. There it is, right down there. They looked at it and said, this is difficult. I don't know. This seems a whole lot easier. We can drive these people out. They got a great land. We're going to go there instead. So what's the lesson we learn from that? Well, it's interesting. Dan there, that town, seemed like a great idea. Easy to take, you know, the people aren't warriors. We can take this town in a hurry. It's not going to be hard. It's a great town. It's lots of fruit and the land is good. Everything we want is right here. That town was one of the first to get taken over by the Arameans. That's what it says up there. That's another nation that got... The town of Dan got taken over again and again and again and again. And at the end of Israel's time here, that was one of the first places that got taken into captivity. So what's the lesson we learn here? Flip back to the verse, Luke. What's the lesson we learn from this? Here's the lesson, I think. God has better insight than you do. Ask him what to do, then do it, whether it makes sense to you or not. It made perfect sense to the tribe of Dan. You told us to go here, God, but it's hard. These people are fighting us. These people up here won't fight us, and it's a good land. Maybe, God, you made a mistake. Maybe, you know, maybe we can just kind of modify your plan and do it this way instead. That never works, guys. That never works. It didn't work for them. If you read through the rest of Israel's history, you see that it did not work for the tribe of Dan. They kind of became a non-entity. They hardly showed up again in Israel's history because they were constantly being taken over. They were way up outside of where God wanted them to be. And what they wanted to happen didn't happen. God has better insight than you do. Ask him what to do, then do it, whether it makes sense to you or not. I wonder if that's something that maybe you and I need to grow in. When we really feel like this is where God is leading me, but gosh, that seems scary. Gosh, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Why would God ask me to do that, whatever that is? And this is why, you know, God tells us in the New Testament, all of those passages that Jesus talks about being a little child, he uses that picture a lot. I love how God uses word pictures, or he shows us, you know, things that help us to understand. And a lot of the time, Jesus used that picture of, you know what, I want you to be like little kids. In Mark 10, verse 15, you know, the people were bringing little children to him. And Jesus said, I tell you the truth, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. And he uses things like that. Statements like that a lot, how we need to be like little kids. And I think one of the reasons is because of this. If you are a parent, you understand how God probably feels about the tribe of Dan. Because I have kids, and I tell my son Sam a lot, you know, buddy, that seems like a good idea, but it really isn't. Like, he has a tree fort, and he said, Dad, I want a BB gun. Oh, okay, what do you want the BB gun for? Well, I want to have it in my tree fort so I can shoot people when they're coming close to the tree fort. Buddy, that seems like a good idea to you. But it just isn't. He really thought, well, what's the big deal? You know, they'll come and I'll shoot them, it'll be fun. No, Sam, that seems like a good idea to you, but it really isn't. And that's funny, you know, that's funny. Guys, understand something. God says we are like little children with him. To the Danites, it just seemed like a good idea. This place up here, it's easy to get to. It's everything we need. When God had said, no, you don't understand. I have a bigger plan. You're going to be outside of where I want to use you. Yes, it's going to be hard now to take this land, but this is where life is going to be good for you. They couldn't see it, and they weren't willing to trust. I had that happen with my other daughter, just learning to be like a little kid. Katie, my middle daughter. You in here, Kate? She's teaching Sunday school. Katie, you know, not a real... She's an introvert like me, and so new things are hard for her. We got her involved in soccer a couple years ago as a little girl to play soccer, just so she could get around some other kids, and it was hard for her, really hard to get into soccer. But, you know, Mom and I kind of pushed her a little bit, and she did it. She loved it, and she was playing soccer, and it was good. She was out there and interacting with the other kids and doing something fun and being part of a team. It was really, really fun for her, and she got used to it, and she liked it. Well, then as she got a little bit older, we started looking, and you know what? She's going to, well... We knew she was going to go into high school. We homeschool our kids through eighth grade. And she was going to go into high school, and Elk Mound, the school that we go to, doesn't have a soccer team. So we thought, oh, wait a minute. You know, she's not going to be able to play soccer after she gets into high school. And this is really good for her to be part of a team. She's athletic. It's good for us to have it. So we're going to have to switch to do something that you know, she can do when she gets into high school. So we started to talk to her about switching to volleyball. She could quit soccer and start playing volleyball, get to know some of the girls that she's going to be going to school with, get to learn the skills of volleyball so she can do this. She really, really, desperately did not want to. Soccer was a known quantity to her. She understood soccer. She knew the people on her team. She was getting, kind of sinking herself into being a soccer player, and the thought of switching to volleyball was very hard for her. But Mom and Dad had insight that she didn't have. We understood something that she didn't understand. And so we gently pushed and gently pushed and got her involved in volleyball. Now she loves it. She's playing volleyball on the JV team, and she's interacting with these girls. She's a sophomore now in high school. And it was a great thing, but she didn't see it at the time. That's how we have to live our lives. God is our dad. God is our dad. He sees things that are going to be good for us, and we may or may not see him. Are we willing to let him be dead? Are we willing to live like little kids? In Proverbs 3, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean or rely on your own understanding." We have to recognize God has greater insight than we do. The tribe of Dan they missed that to their detriment. Maybe that's where you are in your life. Maybe you make decisions based on what you can see, on what makes sense to you. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him. He will make your paths straight. Have you learned how to let God direct your life? That may seem like a really hard thing. If that seems strange to you, maybe that's something you and God need to talk about. Do you know what it looks like and feels like to have God direct your life? If not, well, maybe this is where God says, you know what, this is where you need to grow. You need to learn how to ask and hear and follow me. Maybe that's something that you need to hear. Tribe of Dan missed that to their own detriment. All right, let's keep going. So the tribe of Dan sent these guys out. They're looking for a place. Now, this next little thing that I want to talk about here, it's in verse 19 and 20 of Joshua or of Judges 18. I got to set this up a little bit. If you were here last week, you remember the story how this young Levite had gone out, had been taken in by a guy named Micah. So this guy named Micah had a household. He had set up some idols. This guy named Micah had set up some idols, built a little temple. This Levite who was, God had said to the Levites, I want you to serve in the temple. I want you to be, in essence, the kind of pastors, kind of the clergy of the nation of Israel. This Levite had left where God had put him, done the same thing that the Danites are doing, left there looking for a better situation. He'd come across Micah. Micah had said, hey, come be my priest. Come kind of be my own personal pastor. I'll take care of you. So the Levite did, and it said that Micah treated him like a son and had just kind of opened his home and provided for him, treated this young Levite just like one of his sons. So that's the situation. Now these Danites are coming. They come to Micah's house, and they tell this young Levite, hey, you're being kind of a priest to one man's household. You come and be the priest for us instead. So the situation is the tribe of Dan is moving from where God had put them way up to the top to take over this other city. They're passing Micah's house, turn in there, steal everything they can find, and say to the young Levite, come and be our priest. Abandon this guy who has treated you like a son and come and be our priest. And so then we see this. They answered him, be quiet. This is the Danites' answer to the Levite. Be quiet. Don't say a word. Come with us and be our father and priest. Isn't it better that you serve a tribe and clan in Israel as priest rather than just one man's household? So they're saying to him, leave this guy who's taken care of you. Come be with us because it'll be better with you. Then the priest was glad. He took the ephod, the other household gods, and the carved image and went along with the people. This guy, this Levite, had been destitute, wandering around looking for someone to take care of him someplace, basically homeless, jobless, looking for a job. Micah had taken him in, provided for him, treated him like one of his own sons. The first chance the Levite gets, he steals everything Micah has and goes off with the next best, what in his mind seems like a better situation. Gave up what he had to chase something that was better. He threw away what he had to chase something that was better. And in throwing it away, he kind of stabbed in the back the people who had been good to him. Now, it's interesting, if you read the rest of the story, if you read the rest of this chapter, the tribe of Dan had said to this young Levite, hey, if you come, let's rob this guy blind and you come with us, we'll make you our priest, the priest of the entire tribe. Well, that didn't happen. If you read the rest of the story, it says when the tribe of Dan got up to that town, they took it over, they set it up, they set up some idols as gods, and somebody else was the priest. This young Levite didn't get to be the priest. The Danites lied to him. Or something happened. I don't know if they lied to him or if something happened, but the thing that this Levite, he'd given up the good that Micah had done for him, gone after a better situation, and it didn't pan out. The thing that he wanted didn't pan out. What's the lesson we learn from this? A lesson that we learn from this. Well, possibly this. Following your own desires teaches you to be selfish, which will ruin your relationships. Following your own desires teaches you, trains you to be selfish. As you grow in selfishness, it will ruin your relationships. I'm very bad at this. I will acknowledge that this is something I know God is speaking to me about because I need to grow in it. I'm not good at this. I am a man who, unfortunately, the older I've gotten, the more I see that I have trained myself to be selfish. I have trained myself to consider my own interests more important than those of the people around me, and it has hurt my relationships. And I'm almost 50 years old, and I am reaping the consequences of many years of training myself to be selfish. By God's grace, he's helping me. Yesterday was an example. I didn't even see it at the time, but I think yesterday was an example where God is changing my mind. The Fugates, Zach and Sarah Fugate, young family who have been here for many years. Zach, school teacher, had an opportunity to become a principal up in the school district of Unity, which is quite a ways, about 2 hours away from here. So he and his family moved to Frederick, Wisconsin, which is literally in the middle of nowhere. If you like small town Wisconsin, this is the place for you, because there ain't anything up there. And so they moved to Frederick because Zach is going to be the elementary school principal. So yesterday, a bunch of folks got together to help them move out of their house and to move up to Frederick. Now, email went out to, hey, here's what we need. We need people to come and help pack up. We need people to clean their house. We need people to drive up to Frederick to unpack. In the past, that would have been something that I would have said this. You know what? I was gone last weekend. I'm going to be gone this next weekend. I have to teach on Sunday. There are lots of things going on. I'm an introvert. My natural inclination is to get, you know, stay home, get, if the house isn't taken care of, it's unsettling for me. I feel there's a lot, I got my house half stained right now. There's lots of things that need to happen at home. We're getting into the fall when life's going to get busy again. There are very few weekends left. I'm not ready for my message on Sunday. I just can't do this. I can't, I don't have the time. There are too many things that I have to do for me to take an entire morning or day or something and go and help these folks. There's plenty of other people that can do it. This is how my mind works. And it's very selfish. I considered my own interests more important than anyone else's. I don't even know why it happened, but somehow when I got the email, I said, sure, I'll come. I think God is changing me. I really do. I think God is like we did with my daughter. Sometimes God lays it out in front of me to see if I'll follow. Sometimes he, you're going to go. I think yesterday was a, you're going. Not only did I show up at their house in the morning, but I ended up in Frederick helping them to do that. Here's the thing, though. It was so wonderful to help, but to build relationships. I drove around with Jeff for a while, and we're carrying stuff up and down the stairs and laughing, and I was with Brad and Jason and Chris and Shannon and so many people. I spent the entire day with my brothers and sisters in the Lord, and I felt so good. If I would have been selfish, I would have missed what? Carrying something up the stairs? No. I would have missed the relational connections. Selfishness ruins relationships. God drove that point home to me again. And again, I'm bad at this. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you that story because it was a revelation to me. Maybe you need to grow in this as well. I know I do. Following your own desires teaches you to be selfish, and selfishness ruins relationships. And so I think about this verse in Philippians. It's a verse many of you know. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place, gave him the name that is above every name. Don't consider your own interests more important than those around you. I don't want to be selfish. You know what? You don't want to be selfish. Maybe we are. I know I am. I want God to change me. I want to be different. This is something that God can point out to me. And this is a way that offends you, God. You lead me. You help me to change, okay? All right. So the Danites come. The Levite robs Micah blind. And they're heading away. Micah sees what's going on. This guy named Micah, this tribe of Dan, 600 men have come. His son, Levite priest, has left. They've stolen all his stuff. And if you remember the story from last week, Micah had said, wow, I have it made. He had these gods, these idols. He had this Levite who was going to be his priest. He looked at his life and said, this is perfect. All of a sudden now, there's an army outside robbing him blind. Well, Micah finds out about it, and he chases him down. He's running after these guys, trying to get his stuff back. And so he catches up to them, and they say, what are you doing? The Danites say, what are you doing? You know, what's the matter with you that you called your men to fight? Micah replied, this is verse 24, he replied, you took the gods I made and my priest and went away. What else do I have? How can you ask? What's the matter with you? In other words, he's saying, look, everything I have you just stole from me. All the stuff that I worked for, I thought I had my retirement in place. Everything was just as I wanted it to be. Life was perfect, and you took it all away. It's all gone. And I'm upset about it. But there was nothing he could do about it. If you read the story, the Danites said, look, back off, buddy. You got a few guys. We're 600 warriors. Be careful, because there ain't anything you can do. We're taking your stuff, and that's all you can do about it. Terrible. There was nothing he could do. He had worked to get himself into a position where he thought he was secure, where he thought he had everything he needed, and now it's all gone. There's nothing he can do about it. What's the lesson we learn here? If you build your life on what you can get for yourself, you will eventually lose it all. This is a true statement that Jesus says again and 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 again. If you build your life on what you can get for yourself, you will eventually lose it all. We don't believe that. I know that most of us struggle to completely believe that. No, maybe I'll lose some of it. I got it. That can't be true, can it? It is. It's what happened to Micah. It's a picture to us of this principle that Jesus says again and again and again. He says this or something like this continually in the New Testament. This is in Matthew 6, verse 19. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. Micah's treasure was on earth, what he could create with his own hands. I'm going to fashion a god. I'm going to go out and find my own priest. I'm going to create myself a little kingdom. I'm going to build myself a little fortress, and I will be secure in what I build. Well, he wasn't secure, was he? Thieves came in and stole. at all, and there wasn't anything he could do about it. That's this, guys, that is true for you and I as well. What we can build for ourselves will eventually lose completely. I just watched my dad die. My dad was 80 years old when he died, and my dad had done this, I think, most of his life, perhaps all of his life. He had created what he could create. Money was his most of his security, if not all of it. Money was his barometer of how well he was doing. Money was what he valued. It was it directed, unfortunately, and dictated a lot of his life decisions. Impacted the people around him. His in essence, love for money. My dad died partly. Well, we're all going to die, but my dad died, and his money didn't do him any good. And, you know, that's one of the things that we know is true. You can't take it with you, but watching somebody die, it helps to remind you of the truth of that. That all of the things that my dad had hoped would provide security for him really weren't worth anything those last 3 weeks of his life. And he knew it. He recognized it. And I don't say this to denigrate my dad. I love my dad. I love my dad. Still do. He's a great dad in so many ways. And in so many ways I am like him. But the reality is that my dad did this. He got out of life what he could create on his own. It didn't satisfy him, and it did him no good. And honestly, it's really true. It's gone. No amount of money helped him, gave him comfort. In fact, right to the end, his money was a hindrance to him. It was a source of hurt and pain to him and to some ways the people around him. I share that story only to because it's fresh in my mind, but to remind us, guys, this is true. When God tells us something, he is not just, you know, this is not a poster that you like, you know, a motivational poster. These are absolute truths of life. Do not store up treasure on earth. Why? Because it's going to be gone. It will not avail you. It will not help you. It will not. This is an absolute 100% guaranteed locked in truth. And we don't want to believe it. We just don't want to believe it. That can't be true. Well, it is. It is true. Micah found that out. He created for his life what he could create, and he lost it all. You and I will as well. Do we need to let God change our perspective? Do we need to see above what I can create on this earth that God can give me something better? I may have to give up what I can create on this earth to get what is better. Oh, goodness, that's a hard thing to do, but is that something God is speaking to you about? Is that something God is speaking to you about? Perhaps. Perhaps. Have you offended God by the way you have clung to your own strength, clung to your own abilities, clung to the world? Have you offended God by doing that? Maybe you have. Let God speak to you about that. Last thing, verse 25. So the Danites, Micah comes out and says, what are you doing? The Danites basically said, well, we're stealing your stuff. The Danites answered, don't argue with us, or some hot-tempered man will attack you, and you and your family will lose your lives. So the Danites went their way, and Micah, seeing that they were too strong for him, turned around and went back home. Basically, they said, yeah, we're stealing your stuff. What are you going to do about it? They had power, and they used it to their own advantage. They had the ability to do something, and so they used their ability, they used their power to their own advantage. They did not care how it impacted anyone else. We're going to do what's good for me, what makes sense for me, because I can. Interesting, later on, the Danites were overrun again and again and again. They had power here, and they used it for their own advantage, but later on in life, they were constantly taken captive, constantly overrun. This town that they went and founded was razed again and again and again, and it was fought over back and forth, and people died, and their power wasted away, And they just became a pawn in the greater battles that were going on around them. But here, they had power. They used it for themselves. So what's the lesson you learn here? Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. Jesus lived his life by this principle, I think. In Matthew 26, toward the end of his life, he's going to the cross, Jesus is, and the soldiers, the guards, the crowd is coming out to take him captive, to arrest him. This is the day or possibly 2 days before he's going to die. Jesus knows this is coming. This is not a surprise to him. He knows. He's been telling everybody, they're going to arrest me, they're going to crucify me, I'm going to die. And now the guards are coming to begin that process. And somebody, we think it's Peter, maybe pulled out a sword and started hacking away at the crowd that was coming to arrest Jesus. Jesus said, "Don't do that. Don't do that." And he says an interesting thing here. In verse 52 of Matthew 26, "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him. "For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way?" Jesus had power. He could have said, "You know what? You guys are coming out to get me. You're coming with swords and clubs because you think you're strong in your strength. You can arrest me and kill me. Watch this. I can bring 12 legions of angels who will wipe you out in an instant. Complete and total annihilation, and I will reign supreme. I have that much power. I can destroy the world with my words," Jesus said. "With my thoughts, I created it. I can take it away. God has put at my disposal power that you don't understand. Unbelievable, absolute power. But I will not use it." Why? Because that's not what God asked me to do. I can do this, but I won't, because God has a different plan for my life. Oh my goodness, guys, do we live our lives that way? Are we willing to take our power and submit it to God's direction and to someone else's benefit? Because that's exactly what Jesus did. I have power, but God tells me to use it differently. Why? Because it's going to be better for you if I die, and I'm willing to do that. Again, I fail at this often. This is one that I fail at a lot. I see it. I know it. Doug Markowski told me once, "You teach when you shouldn't." I like to teach. In many ways, God has given me understanding. It's one of the, we all have gifts and strengths. That's one of mine. I understand things and I can teach. I'm comfortable with it. I'm good at it. But the problem is that I use it way too much. And when what is called for is compassion, I teach. When what is called for is listening, I teach. Why? Because it's what's needed? No, it's because of what I'm comfortable with. I don't know how to be compassionate, so I'm just going to teach. Whether it's helpful to you or not, I'm going to get into my comfort zone. I'm going to use my strengths, because then I feel good about myself. I explained it. Yeah, you did, but it wasn't helpful. Sometimes it is. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. What are your strengths? What is your power? Is it at God's direction, and is it at other people's disposal? Are your strengths being directed by God for the benefit of other people? Or are you directing them for your own benefits? The Danites made a terrible mistake. They used their strength for their own purposes, for their own benefit. Came around and bit them. Lots of things there. And I'm going to stop there just by reading the verse that we started with in Psalm 139. And just pray that we would all be willing to have this heart. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life." Father, I just pray that that would be true of me. God, help us. By your grace, help us to be men and women who are willing to say to you, "Search me, O God, know my heart. Test me, God. You see what's going on in me. And Lord, if something needs to change, you have permission. Not that you need it, but to whatever degree I can, I will give you permission to change me. Give us a heart, Lord, that recognizes that we need that, that we're not what we should be, we're not what we could be. Give us the confidence and courage in you to know that you long to be gracious to us. You enjoy working with us. And that we can be different men and women, and we need to be different men and women. But give us the humility, God, to come to you and say, have your way with us. Lord, if there are things that we need to grow in, you search me, you search us, you show us, and you lead us, God. You lead us. Help us. Help us to be men and women of character, because we are letting you direct us. We are letting you change us. We are letting you build us from the inside out. Make us those kind of men and women, Lord. Men and women who are fixed on you, not on the world around us. Who are trusting in you, not in ourselves. God, make us those kind of people. They will be different. We will stand out and shine for you like stars in this world. Make us those kind of men and women, we ask. In Jesus' name, amen.